I think as a matter of course, I always have looked forward to the eve of solstice and solstice itself. I can't think of a year that I haven't looked forward to it more than this year. And for as much as a special reason as anything else, true, we are going through a peculiar and somewhat difficult decade, and this is the very difficult pivotal year. And the purpose of this evening is to perhaps do two or three things. One, I would like what apparently is amounted to a very chosen few to have the benefit of putting yourself on the right frequency for tomorrow night's service, and also to let you enjoy through your own mind and your own way some of the symbology and some of the background that leads up to the idea of solstice as a celebration, and particularly a celebration of symbology. As I mentioned, and many of you know from other lectures and other activities, solstice is the time when the earth finishes its cycle and begins its new cycle. And on a planet that is 8.5 billion years old, this has been going on for a fair amount of time, it has always been celebrated. As long as mankind or humankind has been here, it always has marked a celebration in almost every conceivable level, from spiritual and mental and physical to all sublevels of that. It always has been an indication of some symbology by virtue of gift. Depending where you are in the world, of course, this could be the end of a season, or if you're below the equator, this also can mark the middle of a season, as in the middle of summer. And in any case, what has happened over the thousands of centuries involved here is that it has become the symbolic indication of beginning and end, not only for the planet, but for all of its inhabitants. And the idea of marking that with giving and receiving has been an integral part of the ceremonies and the celebrations from the very beginning. In the early mystical schools, it used to also be celebrated in the same way, with a very mystical service and with all the participants in one way or another giving and receiving some part of the gift, usually representative of the good of the planet, in often in terms of flowers and in perfumed oils, sometimes in incense, where, by the way, you get the story of frankincense and myrrh in the Christmas story. In today's world, today's society, where Christianity celebrates Christmas as the birth, other religions have certain other types of celebration, they all really tie back to solstice and the same type of symbology. The giving of gifts, the receiving of gifts, as a celebration of beginning and end. As a matter of fact, the most important part of the symbology is in the giving and receiving. The person who gives a gift is representing the end of the cycle. The person who receives the gift, it represents the beginning of the new cycle. Because obviously, if you are the gift giver, and you know what the gift is, I assume you know what it is, and you're handing it to someone else who doesn't know what it is, the surprise, which is the beginning, is in their hands. So you represent, here is the end, here's the gift marking the end. They, taking that, accept that as the new beginning. And I suppose there can be variations, but obviously the way we do it is we hand each other a gift. It's very instantaneous. I hand you the gift, so in that one moment, I represent the end of the cycle to you, and you represent in the acceptance the beginning of the new cycle. We share that. You and I share. One of the great joys of the season as we now celebrate it is that's repeated more than once. However, tomorrow night, where we focus on solstice as and the ceremonial part of it, I would like you in that arrangement or that genre to think tonight that really it is a matter of a single gift given and a single gift received. And I'm going to focus on that particular area in a very mystical, perhaps spiritual sense, so that you see it in the light in which it was originally formed and originally designed. Unfortunately, everybody in this room has been born into a period that smacks of commercialism in one sort or another. We have lost a lot in the way that we live of meaning because we have things that don't necessarily have any meaning to them. The idea, for an example, of exchanging gifts, giving and receiving, the idea of the celebration of Christmas, as most of us know it, this time of the year, has somehow fallen into a certain type of obscurity that leaves us perhaps happy or satisfied, but somewhat far away and removed from the actual essence. One of the things that I'd like to point you to tonight is the importance of your own relationship between the spiritual you, which is consciousness, and the human you, which is both mental and physical, in the whole symbology of giver and gift. It is time at least once a year to recognize where you belong and what you're doing and what it means to you to be a part of or recognized in the whole cycle of life. It would be a sad affair for us to be born and live and die and not recognize that in the cycle we grow and we develop and we mark in some way an indices of our own experience, our own awareness, our own newness, and our own beginning. It would be awful. Not that it would be awful if we didn't have a calendar. It would be awful if we did not have some way of saying, well, I am further along than where I was. I have benefited from the seasons of this year, and I am now a different person, or I am a better person, or I'm willing to embrace the new time, the new cycle. The idea of solstice and the gift and the giver really finds its essence in that sense of recognition. Consciousness, which always sees itself in the universe, always recognizes the universe as home, must have that in order for it to understand its completion in the form of a circle. We often talk metaphysically of an onward-upward spiral. But an onward-upward spiral, which is not a closed circle, since it never comes upon itself, it's always moving onward and upward, does pass its initial point in that onward-upward movement. It does, in effect, say, I have had a beginning and a middle and an ending, and I am moving past that to another new beginning. It is no different in the way the planet operates in terms of seasons. We plant, we fertilize, we water, it grows, we harvest, and the fields go barren for a period of time, fallow, if you like, and we plant again. It is the way things are done here. It is the system. And you know as well as I do, a land that is planted and harvested and planted and harvested without having its fallow period is a land that gets used up and in due time does not produce anything anymore. It does not produce any rich food. It does not produce a harvest because it literally exhausts itself. Must understand that the human consciousness, the human spirit, if you like, also goes along with that kind of law. Without knowing, without stopping, without going through your period of completion, renewal, fallow land, if you like, you will soon burn yourself out. There won't be a fertile ground for new seed. New seed to you and I is new experience. If we just go from year to year to year and never stop and never recognize and never build upon that cycle we've just completed, we just keep using ourselves up. In due time, there is no fertile ground for new experience, there is no fertile ground for a new idea, and life just becomes a ho-ho humdrum of struggle and work and really little or no accomplishment and certainly no satisfaction. In the mystical schools, this was well understood. It was well understood on the basis that in order for humanity to survive and the spirit to grow, there must be this point of identity, there must be this point of celebration which says, I have completed. and I am now prepared in my moment of awareness and my fallow state to renew myself to accept new seed. This is why the celebration of solstice itself became such a significant celebration, since it was tied into the actual cycle of the planet. And as the planet itself went through that particular part of its cycle, everyone on it that knew about this and celebrated it tuned in to that condition. But we are, by nature in our time, very willing to give, and we are, by nature and habit, terrible receivers. I don't think that there is anyone who has any difficulty in giving. I think almost everyone has difficulty in receiving. And the attitude of taking a gift or receiving a gift and saying, oh, you shouldn't have, and feeling embarrassed by it, or in your mind wondering, now what do I have to give that person back, which is what I call keeping book, making you a very bad receiver, also has its unfortunate reaction when we come to this time of the year, when the gift and the giver is the essential part of your own growth. I'd like to explore, in the moments that we have together, the elements of the gift, the giver and the receiver, and the gift itself. If we are, in fact, willing to give, but are bad receivers, the first question that arises is, how is it that we are so willing to give? Why are we so anxious to make the gift available? Why do we think in anticipation the gift is coming and I'm all excited about this? Because we don't see the essence of it. We're looking upon it as a way of recognition. We are taking the gift and saying, oh, they're going to be really pleased with this. Now, from that comes, they're going to love me for this, they're going to applaud me for this, they're going to like me for this, and somehow my position, my stature improves because I have given the gift. Of course, another part of your mind says, nah, they're not going to like it at all, and you become terrified. Maybe I didn't do the right thing, and I hope they like it. How many times have you ever given a gift or had one given to you where the person says, I hope you like it? Or the person says, well, let me tell you about this first so that you're not upset and do not accept it and applaud me. What's happened is we have missed the essence of the gift giving, and we've missed the spiritual essence of it. The universe lives on its willingness to give and to receive. It is a creative universe. If you like to look at it in terms of what we have the kind of concept we have with God, we always think of a Godhead in terms of giving, and giving willingly. I mean, all religion has been built on the fact that God is abundant, God gives. And metaphysics is certainly built on the premise that the universe gives. Nobody ever talks about receiving. Everybody talks about giving. We have an abundant universe, we have an omnipotent universe, we have an infinite universe, and all these things are available. We look out on the planet in nature, we look out on that ocean, we realize that it represents an almost infinite abundance. There is food galore, there are fish in the sea by the millions, there is grain growing on the land by the bushel. Everything is in abundance. And our concept is that it's all giving, it's all giving, it's all giving. And we never look at it in terms that the giving, the essence of giving, is the essence of the creative force, not only of the universe, but of us as individuals. That it isn't the gift that we give, it is the force that we use as the perpetuation of the universe as an infinite condition. The universe cannot not give. God cannot stop giving. But in understanding this, we lose sight almost immediately of the gift and the reception of it. For an example, when you look across a plain of waving wheat and say, look at all of that abundance. Isn't nature marvelous that it can give out of the land all of this grain, all of this marvelous food? And you stop your thought there. You don't realize what the gift itself means. And if I said, well, then how about you receiving? your concept is, well, yeah, I go to the store and I buy a loaf of bread, which could have been made by this grain, and I have to pay so many dollars for it. And you miss the whole essence. Immediately it becomes mundane and commercial. And there isn't a continuity between the gift, or the giver rather, the gift and the receiver. What must be understood in order to get the essence from solstice is that the giving portion of this whole system is the natural course and function of an intelligent universe, or intelligent universe. It can no less withhold its gift than it can, in effect, destroy itself. Now, how that affects you and I is that we are then natural givers. To withhold a gift is to work against the flow of the universe. So if I say to you, I would like to give you this gift, but I can't, or I won't, or for some reason I will withhold it, I'm acting as stoppage in the universe. Well, that isn't terribly important in the interaction between you and I. But when you go to yourself and say, well, I would like to give you this, but I'm not going to do it, now you're in serious trouble, because it's consciousness, soul if you like, spirit if you like, within you that says, I am by nature a giver. If you stop me from giving, you separate me from the source of love in the universe, of caring in the universe, of intelligence in the universe. You separate me. You kill me. So in essence, we find ourselves in a situation by not allowing our consciousness to give to ourselves, which is mind and body, as the receiver, we simply put ourselves in a position of separateness. And that is that cold, bleak area which makes you feel that you're not doing anything in life, you're not growing, you're not becoming, that life isn't very good to you, and that you are not, in effect, receiving. How many people, not necessarily you, but how many people talk about, I don't have this in life, and I don't have enough money, and I don't have the right house, and I don't have a good job, and I don't have this, and I don't have that. And they complain about what they have or don't have, mostly what they don't have. And yet, in every case, I could probably show you that they also don't let their consciousness, their own spirit, give to themselves. What has spirit got to give? Everything that's in the universe. Spirit gives whatever the universe has. Wisdom, love, happiness, joy, abundance, harmony, beauty, everything. And we are very willing, symbolically, at this time of the year, Christmas being a season that we all are used to and accept, to symbolize this in some item, and then turn right around, if not on the same day, the next day, and still say to our consciousness, oh, I can't accept all of this from you. I can't accept your wisdom. I can't accept this joy. I can't accept this harmony. I can't accept this love. I can't accept this caring. I can't accept this beauty. And why would you say that? Because you are the only receiver. Your spirit does not give to something else. It gives to you. It gives to your humanness. The whole symbol of the Christmas story, the birth of a child, is the symbol of heaven, consciousness, spirituality, making itself manifest at the point of the receiver. The gift and the receiver. God gives. And it manifests in the story as the child, and it is received by the rest of us on a human level. That's the essence of the symbology. It is the story which tells you how, very clearly, how to practice the giving and receiving that is so essential in solstice as a ceremony. How to recognize that you must give to yourself constantly, because it is the only natural flow the universe has. It is the only natural expression of the universe. It has no effect on anyone else. It isn't designed for anyone else, since each one of you are or is your own giver and your own receiver. I can't give to you. I can give to me. My consciousness is not designed to hand you something. It is completely and fully designed to hand me all of the elements of the universe that make up the quality and the infinity of this omnipotent, marvelous existence. And how often, like you, do I refute that? I refute it constantly, as you do, every single day. Every time I say I don't have, every time I say I wish I had, every time I tell you I can't, every time I look at my life and find some limitation, every time I do that, I am turning my back on the giver, and I am refusing the gift. And I am saying to consciousness, to spirit if you like, again, I don't care how you interchange those words, no thank you, I don't want that. Fortunately, consciousness is not human. It does not have emotion, and therefore it doesn't get mad and say, well, the heck with you, I'm tired of giving to you, so I quit. Said you won't take it, I'm going to stop doing it. It doesn't do that. It constantly does what it was designed to do, to give and to give and to give. But what happens when water, which is designed to flow, is blocked up? It backs up. And after a while, the water becomes not a positive element, but a negative element, drowning things behind it, causing stagnation, developing more problems than it was ever designed to do. That happens in consciousness. Your spirit backs up. It clogs up, not unlike a drain. It has no flow in the giving element. It has no way of getting the gift out. It has no point of reception, none whatsoever. And there is nothing more unfortunate, more devastating, and more unspiritual than a spirit which has been clogged up due to lack of acceptance on the part of the receiver. Because it knows nothing else. It can't change to do anything else. It can't go out on the marketplace and sell its gift. It can't give it away to another person. I can't give you love if I can't accept my own love. I can't give you wisdom if I can't accept from my spirit the wisdom it's willing to give me. I can't transfer to you anything that I have refused to take from my own area. And therefore, if I go out, whether it be actual or by symbol or by any other means, and try to give it to you to open up my own flow, that doesn't work. Have you not ever heard of post-Christmas depression? Post-Christmas depression is not that all the gifts are opened up. It is the recognition that it didn't mean a damn thing. All that symbol, all that activity, all that desire to make yourself known, to be the giver, to be the receiver, to celebrate, which again is the marking of solstice in its own terms, has gone for naught, because you're no different the day after Christmas than you were the day on Christmas or the day before, since you still have not accepted the ultimate gift. You still have not accepted the child. You have not accepted the symbol of, as they do it in religious circles, the Christ, which really represents nothing more than the good, the wisdom, the love, the caring, the infinity of the universe. And so we go into a depression over it, recognizing in some sense that we've received nothing, and that all that we have given means nothing. In the story, three wise men come from the East. Why three wise men? Because they represent in the story spiritual, mental, and physical. They are the epitome of the three elements of man. They come from the East, where the sun rises, where the new day begins. And they carry with them gifts. They carry gifts that smell, that have fragrance. They carry with them gifts that have an ultimate use in a more spiritual, etheric term. And they lay it at the foot of the child. What can a baby do with frankincense and myrrh? Nobody ever seems to stop and think about that. I mean, what happened to Barbie? You know, where are the toys? They bring in the story elements that represent the essence of the whole giving and the whole receiving system that makes life and gives life its vitality. We turn around by not accepting from consciousness those gifts and try to replicate this and say, this is good. This is our celebration. Well, mind you, I'm not pointing out that at any given day or any Christmas day you are not happy or that you are not pleased with your gift. Unfortunately, you are pleased with some gifts more than you're pleased with others. And those that you give also give pleasure in the same way. And the essence of it is gone. And the next day or the day after, represented by, if you have children, broken trains and pieces missing and something that fall apart, feel this heaviness which says, well, thank God that's over with. We don't have to do that again for another year. And everything is lost. Everything that matters is lost because you have not entered the cycle, you have not accepted the gift, you have not understood it, and you have not, in any sense, been the giver. If you realize that in the whole cycle of life, represented each year by the turning at solstice time, that it marks for you a point of awareness, that no matter how you have conducted yourself throughout the year, every moment of every day of that year has been a moment of gift-giving. That literally every waking moment, every sleeping moment, every beat of your heart has done nothing more than entered into the cycle of the universe constantly pouring at you this abundance of good. And it is time to stop on an evening like this and say, how often have I recognized that? How much of that have I been willing to accept? How much love have you really taken? Not from other people, from the universe. How much wisdom have I let my mind and spirit give me to guide me through life? How much awareness have I had? How many complaints have I had which have blocked this off? How often have I recognized this infinite, loving, caring flow that passes through me every single moment of my life? And I think that becomes frightening because the reaction is, I haven't done this at all. I haven't done this at all. I've passed through a whole year and a whole cycle, and I have hardly ever, ever accepted those gifts, which have been there every moment of every day. And now I look at my life and say, oh, boy, I'm glad the year's over. It has been a struggle. Why should it have been a struggle? There wasn't a moment that the universe wasn't giving you what you needed to make life enjoyable. Not what you think you want, what was necessary for you. Because if you got what you thought you want, you'd be in worse shape in the end than you were in the beginning. And you have no idea what you really should have. And what you've done is allowed yourself to go in your very human way through the mundane motions of life without living. And here you are at the end of the year not recognizing that so much of the harvest which had gone through the process of planting and the seed and growth has not been harvested, has not been used, has not been accepted, has not been recognized. Is it any wonder that next year is not much better than this year, and this year is not much better than the year before? Is it any wonder that we struggle through 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 and 70 years and look back and not and realize that we really haven't had much out of this life? When in effect it should be a life so overwhelming, so overpowering with its good, that we are in almost a complete euphoric state almost all of the time. It's not to say it doesn't have its opportunities, which gives us challenge, but a challenge is a gift. The universe couldn't possibly give you a burden. That is impossible. A burden, as we define a burden, is a negative. The universe cannot produce a negative. It cannot do this. There is no gift wrapped in that kind of a wrapper. It gives you only those things which are good for you. If you look upon it as a burden, you're backing up in the pipes again. If you look upon it as an opportunity, that's a good beginning. But that's only part of it. To see it as an opportunity is one thing. To accept it as a gift and recognize that within that are all the elements for the joy that it contains, that is wisdom. And that is what life is all about. So we come to the night before solstice really with a purpose, as it always has been in the mystical school, to stop and to literally, not by critique, but to recognize what an abundant, loving, caring year it has been. Because we don't want to critique it. We can always find in our human element something wrong with it. We can always find in the story a dirty old manger. We can always find in our lives the innkeeper who says you can't sleep here. We can always find something that says, no, this is not the right place to be. We can find that. We don't have to look very far for that. But that isn't what we do on the evening before solstice. We stop and recognize that there are three wise men who traverse the land of our experience constantly, always bringing us these symbols of the universe's unique good. We stop and realize that it has been an abundant year, that we have perhaps missed a great number of the gifts, and that it is time that we take ourselves in hand and renew ourselves and say to ourselves, we must stop this, for we are not good receivers. And that I promise, I devote myself to recognizing this infinite, never-ending, omnipotent gift that will occur now and tomorrow and for all the year ahead. Now, if you're one of those marvelous, unique, and loving people who have seen the year that way, then it is a recognition of how far and how good and how fulfilling all the gifts have been to you, which has been a great deal. That not have you come a far way, but that you have been filled with all of the good as a good receiver. That you have opened up to the universe a line, a pipeline, if you like, of unlimited flow. That you have allowed yourself to be a true child. That you have accepted all of the elements that the universe had available to you, and you are grateful, and you are joyful, and you are responsive, you recognize your right to receive them, and you are prepared to go on to greater things, greater gifts, greater experiences. It is then that we arrive at solstice, or for those of you who like the idea of Christmas, at that moment of joy. That's what the word joy in the whole celebration means. Not the joy of the birth in a mundane sense, but the joy of recognizing that you not only have received in this abundance, but you are going to receive consistently, and it will be even more. For the line that allows you to receive grows and grows. And where at this moment you can receive so much, in the next moment you can receive so much more, and there's no end to it. There is that ultimate joy, not ultimate, but certainly that great joy that recognizes that you are so filled and tomorrow you will be more filled. And that there is nothing in your life that will not be there as both gift and answers to those challenges which are the gifts that you receive. So in effect then, the first element of recognition in the celebration is that you are the giver. Your spirit, your soul, your consciousness has throughout the whole year given to you all of the elements that the universe has in store and prepared for you. They have been exciting. They have been well-defined for your needs. They have been fulfilling. They certainly have been loving. And it is time to recognize again, not by critique, but by awareness, how much of that you have gotten and how much you have turned away from. So that you realize that the opening, the flow, must be that much more from this moment on. But now we come to that point which I've touched upon, but which really constitutes the most difficult element, and that is being the good receiver. We live in a time, and have lived for quite some time, in which we have been educated that to receive, and to receive in abundance, is almost putting yourself in the state of charity. That no one has a right to have more than the next person. No one has a right to have something better than the next person. And that to have that, you have to find some excuse for having received that. Worse than that, we get to a position where you are required, should you have it, to share it. I didn't see anything in the universe that says if you have it, you have to share it. I don't see anything in the law of the universe that says that I must give away those things which the universe gives me. As a matter of fact, I don't even recall anything in Moses' tablet which says, whatever you get, you got to split up. I don't see any law in that. There isn't anything that dictates that what you have must be shared, what you have must be given away, that you have no right to hold on to it, you have no right to use it. I don't see anything anywhere that makes that statement. And yet, to anyone who receives, and should they think for one moment they have received more than the next person, their first element or their first state of mind is guilt. And the guilt says, I either have to give this away, give part of it away, or somehow come up with a story that will allow me to keep it. And in any case, if whatever of those three elements you use, you are a lousy receiver. Now, how would it be, for an example, and I think some of you have gone through this, if you've had children, you've gone through it. You make a great effort to give to someone something that you think is very important. And that carries with it perhaps a sincere message of caring and love, and it symbolizes a great deal of devotion. And let us assume that they accept it, under protest, of course. But then the next time you turn around, they have given it away, which is their right. But how do you feel about this? How do you feel about giving someone something that, let's say, since we live in this era in commercial time, cost a lot of money? You put a great deal of effort into buying it, finding it, paying for it. And they are so overwhelmed with what it is that they put it away and lock it up for fear of losing it. Or for fear of putting it on their hand or their wrist or their blouse someplace and say, well, I can't wear it because, you know, what would my friends think? They think I'm too ostentatious. Think I'm showing off. How do you feel about that? Terrible. Your attitude is, I went to a lot to give you this. I mean, I really wanted you to have it. And it really hurts if you're just going to put it in a drawer or a bank vault or in some other way that you don't even have it or use it. I mean, that's terrible. It's an insult to everything I've gone through to give it to you. Something similar to that would go through your head if you're still breathing and have any kind of humanness at all. How do you think the universe feels when you act the same way? How do you think consciousness reacts in giving you these unlimited gifts that are invaluable, that cannot be priced by any standard, when in effect you say, no, if I use that, everybody will think I'm different. Everybody will think I'm ostentatious. Everybody will think I am, and then you can fill in the blanks. I am too smart, I am too lucky, I am too beautiful, I am too this, I am too that. And I don't want to do that because everybody will think that I am different. So no thanks, I don't want the gift. Or if you give it to me, I will put it in the drawer and leave it there. How would you feel? How do you think the universe feels if the universe would feel? The reaction, of course, on a human sense, I think is well and easy to gauge. Consciousness, again, fortunately, doesn't have that kind of reaction. But that attitude on the part of the receiver is what begins to clog up the system. It puts a backlog into the consciousness in which the gift is not accepted. And if the gift is not accepted, it's not being used. Or if it is accepted and not being used, the end result amounts to the same thing. And who in the end manifests this and shows the condition? You do. You turn around and say, no, consciousness, I don't want that love that you're giving me. Because if I take that love, people will start saying things about me. They'll say I'm selfish. They'll say I'm self-centered. So thanks a lot, but no thanks. I really can't use that love. And then a week later, you walk into my office or somebody else's office and say, you know what's wrong in my life? I don't have anybody to love. Nobody loves me. The very thing you're looking for has been given to you. The very thing you want the most has already been there, and you've already refused it. You've turned it away. And then turn right around in your human element and complain that you don't have it. And you're saying, I don't have it. And I say, what does that mean? And you say, well, nobody is there in my life that loves me. Really? Probably right. Because you can't receive love from another person. You receive love from the universe. You share it with another person. You don't share your love. You share your love and their love. Love doesn't get transferred. Wisdom doesn't get transferred. I don't tell you anything. I don't impart anything to you by giving you what is in my head. I share what I have with what you have. And we recognize that sharing. It is the joy of opening the prison together. It is a joy of both of us sitting down and pulling off the ribbon and pushing back the tissue paper and oohing and aahing over the contents. We share. You're excited, I'm excited. But we haven't given each other anything. Therefore, if I don't give to me and I try to make some effort to give to you, it goes for naught. You don't receive and I don't really give. And it's because we have spent literally all our lives from childhood in a system which says, well, take what you want, but don't take too much, as the song goes, that we have convinced ourselves that to give is better than to receive. An attitude which has been promoted mainly by the Salvation Army and other organizations of that ilk. And why not? Those who will not give to themselves are very eager and very willing to make those who will accept guilty for it. It's part of the game. It's part of the system. If I'm unwilling to give, if I'm unwilling to give and take, if I'm unwilling, period, then of course I'm going to turn to you and make you feel as guilty as possible because I am not getting and you are. Why should you have your joy and your love and your wisdom? Why should you have a happy life and not me? Why should you get away with not feeling guilty for that? I am the main charity, therefore give to me. I am unfortunate. I am less fortunate. Can you imagine a universe of this intelligence producing less fortunate? How can a universe produce less fortunate anything? How can it produce more fortunate anything? A universe of omnipotence, of infinite intelligence, only produces omnipotent, infinite intelligence. It doesn't produce grades and gradations. It doesn't produce less love and more love. It produces love. The degree of what it is dependent upon your ability to give and receive it to yourself. It is not a question of what the universe parcels out. The universe has no mechanism to change the degree or the quantity of what it makes available. It just makes it all available. There is infinite love out there. There is infinite wisdom. There is infinite joy. And if you don't want your share of it, fine. But then don't come around at a specific time of the year and ask me to put something in the pot and give you that which you are unwilling to accept, which is there for you in the same amount, in the same degree that it's there for me. And because we design a system like that, we buy into a system like that. And we say at a time of year like this, well, we must share our gifts. We must be thankful for what we have. We must look upon it as if God has blessed us and we are more fortunate than our fellow man or our fellow person, fellow human. How horrible that is. how that locks us into our ignorance, how that makes us feel that we have no right throughout the coming year as we enter this new cycle to plant new seeds. We haven't got a right to plant. We haven't got a right to harvest. And if we do, are we going to be called upon? Are we going to be threatened? Are we going to be badgered? Are we going to be cajoled into sharing that harvest at the end of the year because we were willing to plant and to nurture and to harvest and to receive? In which case the attitude is, why should I go through all of that? Why must I put up with that? Because I don't gain any benefit if that's the system. You're right. You don't gain any benefit if you are working to satisfy and gratify those who will not work and will not receive. How many Christmases, solstices if you like, those of you who've been around me for a while, have you gone through the experience of giving only to see in the other person a real unwillingness to receive? It not only diminishes the gift, it diminishes you. It certainly diminishes them. And how often in that situation have you felt toward yourself unfortunate and embarrassed and guilty because somehow you didn't live up to the expectation of the good giver? How many ways do we find and design and produce within the system to undermine our willingness to receive? So that even if we stop at solstice to recognize, to identify, to celebrate, to renew, that we constantly pull ourselves back to the human level and say, well, I don't want to be too good about this. I don't want to accept too much. I don't want to really put myself in a position. We're unwilling to recognize our own uniqueness in terms of our own blueprint, our own pattern. You are not me, and I am not you. We will not go through this life exactly the same. In fact, there's a good chance we will not go through this life the same at all. You are destined to do things I am not, and vice versa. You are destined to receive gifts, I am not. You are destined to produce things, I am not. And you are destined to give things, I am not. And if I stop to compare myself with you or you with me, then I will never be satisfied with my gifts. I will never be happy with either my giving or my receiving. And I think that lies at the very heart of the problem and the very necessity of recognition on the evening before solstice that you are unique. You're not necessarily destined to be a multimillionaire. You are not necessarily destined to be the world's greatest engineer or create the world's most marvelous piece of artwork or sing the world's greatest song. You're destined to be you. And whatever that is, that has no limitation. But you will never, ever enjoy you if you keep refusing the gifts which are given to bring you to that fulfillment. But they're not going to be the same gifts that I receive. And to look across at me or to anyone else and say, how come they have and how come I don't, is as an effective way to refuse your gift as any I know of. An effective way to clog the pipe and backlog this thing so that at the end of the year you have nothing. Why can't you just stop and accept what you are? What you are has no limitation. What you are is not what anybody else is. What you are has no value and no relationship at all to what the rest of the world says you should be. What you are is what you are. What you represent here is, on the part of the universe, one of the most unique gifts of the planet. You are, in every sense of the word, a flower the like of which does not grow anyplace else. You are a tree beyond all trees. There is no other tree like you. You are an ocean and the color of the sea beyond all other oceans and sea. Why can't you stop and accept that? Why must you be, when you are the ocean, the shore? And when you're the tree, why do you want to be the flower? And when you're the flower, why do you want to be the rock? What drives you to refute your unique gifts? What do you seek by doing that? Recognition? Applause? Acceptance? Perhaps, because those are all words that are used. And to what end? So that you can go through 80 years of misery? And that we can put as an epitaph on your tombstone, "Here lies Joe. He never did anything different from anybody else. To the bitter end, he died and was put underground like the rest of us." And that's all you've got to show for it. You say, well, that's a rather extreme, bleak outlook. No, it isn't. We're putting people underground every day that have reached that particular point. And we'll continue to do that. Is that what you're going to do at this very important point in which the planet, this beautiful, loving, caring, gorgeous planet, has come to at the end of a cycle? Is that what you're willing to accept for you? If it is, then you are missing all the good that this represents. The great intense celebration of solstice has been that fact that nothing is more important than the recognition of your uniqueness in the cycle. You have gone through a season. You have been planted a year ago. You have been watered and fertilized and cared for rather badly at times, admittedly. You have grown, hopefully to the best of your ability. You have flowered. You have been harvested. Isn't that enough to rejoice about? Isn't that enough to stop long enough and see that you have given something back, both to the universe and to the planet? Isn't that enough to stand up and sing the hallelujah chorus 10 times over and let your soul soar and your heart literally burst with joy? How could you ask for much more than that? How could you look for much more than that? What is there beyond that in terms of gift and giver? I don't know. If you have something that is beyond that, I'd be willing to look at it. But I don't know of anything beyond that. But I do know how terrible it is to diminish that. I do know to come to this cycle and not recognize what has been given to you. Not recognize how this is yours and yours alone. Not recognize that there is only one of a kind. Is the saddest of all things in this season. We go out at this time of the year to buy, by symbol, those things we would like to give the people we care for. Gifts that we, to the people we care for. One of the things almost every one of us tries to do is to find something unique, something unusual, something that stands alone. So that not only are we pleased to give it, but we hope and are usually satisfied that the receiver says, "Oh, this is really unusual. I really appreciate it, because it isn't like anything else." We make that special effort, and here we come to the end of a cycle and don't see that in ourselves. Here we come to the end of the cycle and don't turn within to consciousness and say, "Thanks, this is really one of a kind. I am really one of a kind. This is marvelous. There isn't another piece made like me. There isn't another piece that talks like me, sings like me, walks like me, thinks like me, breathes like me. I am one of a kind." We put great value. We turn an object over and say, "Oh, gee, the maker signed this. Look at this. There's the mark of the artist that did this. One of a kind." Immediately, that makes it more valuable. Don't you think it's about time you turned yourself over and saw your maker's mark? And realized that you're one of a kind, there's no other like you, and you're very valuable? Celebration brings us to this point. Solstice brings us to this recognition. Its design is to do this. But even if you were, in every sense of the word, the great giver, And even if you recognize the great gift, it goes for naught. It's like a bell without a clapper if you're not a good receiver. If you cannot take not only what the universe has provided to you, but if you cannot accept yourself as the giver, the gift, and the receiver. If you cannot recognize that the joy and thrill of this moment, tomorrow's moment, and Christmas Day, if you like to celebrate on that day, nothing wrong with that, is that all that transpires between you and others is just the symbol of your own gift to yourself. It's just a recognition of your own uniqueness. Could you give the gifts you've bought for the season to those that you want to give it to and not hear from them? Could you leave it all under the tree and walk away, hop a plane and end up in Timbuktu someplace and never hear from them again, never find out whether they liked it? Be hard, wouldn't it? Doesn't that tell you something? That you're not really giving anything. You're waiting for recognition. You're waiting for applause. Do you like this? Tell me you like this. I mean, I went to a lot of trouble. Tell me you like this. See, that's not a good giver. And if you're not a good giver, you can't be a good receiver. Once you give, it is given. How it is received is of no concern to you. Don't you see how this translates back to consciousness? Translates back because consciousness says, we're giving you everything out of the universe. Now, if you don't want to take it, there isn't anything that we can do about it. That's why consciousness doesn't get upset. That's why it's not mad. That's why it doesn't hurt you. It just says, I just keep on giving. I don't really know what you're going to do with it. I don't ever remember reading any place in the story, Christian story, of the birth of Jesus where anybody walked by and said, hey, that's an ugly kid you got there. Nobody ever said that. But you know what? Nobody ever came by and said, that's a beautiful baby. The point I'm making is there was no comment. The reason there was no comment is the story is allegorical. It's symbolic. It doesn't make any difference whether that baby was good looking or not good looking. The point was it was a gift. And gifts are not evaluated. Neither is the giver, neither is the receiver. I don't remember seeing anything in the story of Joseph complaining of the fact that he wasn't the father. I don't see any court action for paternity suits involved. I don't see any of that. And it isn't in there, and it isn't in there because it is trying to impress you in one of the most simplest, if not one of the most loving and caring of stories, that that is not the way it's done. All gifts are beautiful. No gift is evaluated, and no response from the receiver is necessary other than to use it. And there was a host of angels which said, behold, unto you this day a son is given. It's all symbolic. It's all the word which says, given you this day. What day? Christmas Day? New Year's Day? Solstice? No. The whole symbol is every day it's born. And every day it's just as beautiful as the day before. And every day the gift is accepted without question. And it's accepted without evaluation. And it's accepted without meaning. It is. And it's embraced. And it's placed in its proper experience. And you go on from there. It's simple, but it becomes complex when we take it out into the world. It is why the story, people, uses the symbol of a baby and a child. There is probably nothing more fragile and more subject to the elements and the brutality of the world. Remember, part of the story, too, is how the kings of the world and the Caesars of the world did not like this birth. Nothing is more unprotected than a baby, a newborn baby. What does that mean to you? It means that your gift, which you get all the time, is that fragile. It means that going out into the world, dangling it, holding it up for inspection, throwing it into the marketplace is not what you do with your gifts. It means that you don't go running out and say, listen, I got a gift of intelligence, I know. Now listen to this. It doesn't mean that you go out and say, I have a gift of love, so all of you people line up here and I'll hug every one of you and give you love. It doesn't mean that I can heal, so all of you aren't sick anymore. Come up here and I'll put my hands on you and I'll heal you. Yeah, that's throwing the baby into the marketplace. That's throwing the baby under the wheels of a carriage. That's killing the gift. It is no more logical to do that than to unwrap a present that really pleases you, that's very precious to you, and rush across the lawn to the neighbor, waving it madly in the air, saying, look what I got, look what I got. We do that sometimes. We actually do. And the neighbor looks at it and says, nice. Harry gave me one of those last year. I say, oh, well. All of a sudden, you lose all the impetus, you lose all the caring. Because that's how humankind treats it. Because on the human level, they are not willing to be givers and receivers. Therefore, they don't want you to have the gift. Why would you take the new babe out into the world and throw it to the wolves? And that's what it is, the wolves of Caesar. Why would you do that? So one of the elements of solstice in the recognition is that moment that is so precious to you, that occurs every day of your life, in which you recognize, fully recognize, I am the giver and I am the gift and I am the receiver, and it all remains quietly within me, wrapped in swaddling clothes, in my heart, in my head, in my body, in my soul. The world will eventually see it. When? When it grows up. When it becomes mature. There is another part of this story that we often forget. The baby is born. We don't hear much more about the baby after that point. But we hear a lot about the baby as a young man in his 30s. How come? Because that is the symbol and marks the age of maturity. When the gift is matured, when it has fulfilled itself, now we can take it out into Caesar's world and say, you can look at this. Now it's strong enough to withstand all the comments, all the brutality, all of the spears and slings and arrows that the world will throw against it. But don't you see that is an essential part of solstice? The end of solstice marks the maturity of your year. It marks the point in which all your good has now matured. It marks that ability for you to go out and say to the world, look, world, here I am. I've gone through a season. I have gone through my cycle. I now present myself to you. And you're not afraid that the world is going to attack that because you know you're strong enough to live with it. That the world can't diminish it. And at the same moment you're doing that, there is a new baby being born, a new gift being received, a new you that lies deeply protected within. But don't you see how effective that is, how marvelous that is, how true to the cycle? You can understand why solstice operates in a beginning-ending ceremony that is, in effect, a unitized ceremony. I give what I have become. I am the ultimate of that cycle. I am complete. I now stand in front of the world and joyfully expose to it all that I have gotten for the year, spiritually, mentally, and physically. I have no fears about that. I have no reservations about it. I have no qualms about it. It is mature, strong, substantial. The tree has grown to its maturity. And in the next breath, I have a new baby. I have a new me starting a new cycle. I have a little child wrapped warmly and comfortably next to my heart that is not going to be taken out into the world and shown. That is my continual gift. And until that matures at the end of next cycle, it will remain protected, allowed to grow, allowed to find its own space. That's all the symbology of this. It is why there is both sadness in solstice and joy. It is why that it represents the human part of us and the spiritual part of us. And it does so instantaneously, jointly, together. We don't separate it. I think it's one of the unfortunate elements of the Christian practice that Christmas comes and the emphasis is on the celebration of birth. They don't celebrate the ending. They don't celebrate the gift and the maturity. It focuses on birth, which is why it seems to have such a short-lived impression and feeling among the individuals. That is, it's certainly a joyful moment, but it's only half of it. So that those of you who still do or used to participate in church always have that odd feeling. You love going, midnight service for an example, and the songs and the recognition, the symbology, the uplifting experience, which really represents the new you and the newness, symbolized by the birth of the child. But then you go out of the church and something is missing. There is that letdown again. It's not complete. The ending wasn't presented. The mature individual was not presented. Well, in solstice, that is an integral part of the meaning that ties into the planet. The planet recognizes that it's finished its cycle. Planet says, in effect, I have given all I can give, Mother Nature, if you like. All I can give to you, I have given throughout the year. I now stand to be counted, which is part of the story. I stand to be recognized. But at the same time, I am now fallow, refurbishing, ready to receive the new seed, ready in my new cycle. I hope tomorrow night, and tonight too, in your own way. But if I could urge you to one thing, I would urge you tonight to take a moment when you're home and you're quiet, probably before you go to sleep, and put aside the world and its symbology and how it treats this season, and recognize for the first time perhaps how important it is for you to be the giver and the gift and a good receiver, and how that business of receiving is the essential part of you recognizing that at this point you come before the world and say, I am mature, I am grown up now, I am the end result of my year cycle, and I am proud of this. That you don't look upon it in criticism or with lack or with some sense of I wasn't sufficient or I wasn't up to the task. You don't look upon it as any forward progress or growth, but just you. So that tomorrow night, when you come to ceremony and mingle with the others who are not here tonight, who will be there, that your awareness is that much more. That you recognize the whole essence of the ceremony is the ending, which is the maturity, and within you, the recognition of a new birth and the commitment to gift for the rest of the cycle, next year, the rest of the year, in which you pledge, if you like, your awareness to that commitment that never again shall you turn away from the giver. Never again will you refuse your gifts. And never again will you go rushing out into the world with them, dangling them by the feet, putting them in a place of danger just to show that you have them, but rather you will accept them and nurture them. Some of them will come into fruition throughout the whole year. But at the end result, the ultimate will be how you stand 1 year from now at the end of the cycle as the completed person. For in solstice we recognize death and birth, as one event. We recognize spirit and body as one unit. We recognize beginning and end as a total completion, not separate. And so if there's any single message that comes out of solstice, it is receive and be good to yourself. And recognize in the very end and in the ultimate that you are the giver, the gift, and the receiver. And in your own uniqueness, no one and nothing duplicates that or can replace it. In the ultimate moment tomorrow night, I hope that that recognition in some way brings you, in your own way, to that ultimate sense of joy, so that whatever sings within you can join the same chorus that is represented by the earth and nature singing at that very moment in the same awareness of its completion and its new birth. And I think then you will find the essence of the significance of not only solstice, but all the meaning of what life has to give. Of course, I look forward to participating with you.